Welcome, welcome, welcome to all of our two and four-legged listeners. Welcome back to What the Bark, the Right Paw podcast. It's the dog world done differently. Every week we gather around the microphones and discuss a different topic in the dog world, from breeding to owners to health to socialization. And this week we've got a very hot topic in the dog world, definitely something very controversial and something that's doing the rounds at the moment. But before we get stuck into it, I have to introduce my partner in crime. So I'm Nathan, and of course, we've got George with us. George, welcome.
Hey, hi, Nathan. Yes, controversial. Isn't there a Prince track controversy? Maybe we should have started with that as our first. This will definitely have a lot of people asking questions and wanting answers.
A lot of people
and
hopefully, talking.
Yeah, hopefully this podcast can at least make it clear, because I'm still a bit confused by this.
It came out of nowhere, this breeding ban, you know, in Norway, which we're going to dive into, sort of, you know, came out of the woodwork and has really taken the world by storm. But, you know, we thought it's not just for us to talk about. We had to you know, bring back one of our original guests. So it's the first return of a guest as well.
Yes, and a real expert. You know, so we've sort of haven't really had a real expert like this, and I just, another thing that stand out about this guest is just the professional way she sort of, I like the tone as she speaks, the way she corrects all my bad English. Let's get her on, eh?
Yes, no, absolutely. So a big welcome back to Dr. Imogen Tomlin-Game to the Right Paw Podcast.
Yeah, I am.
Thank you, guys. I don't know if I can live up to that intro, George. I'm not, I don't know if I'm nervous about it. Like,
no, fine. You're right. The ratings, since the first time we've had a chat, our ratings have just skyrocketed. So you've come back really just based on, you know, how just how popular we've become. We've introduced a lot of new things along the way, but it's Nathan and I have kept it pretty much the same.
Perfect. Good to hear, guys.
Sorry to bring you in as the expert in this sort of controversial topic, but yeah, let's get started on it. It's about maybe Nathan, we should start by actually defining what the this landmark ruling was, so all our listeners are clear about what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, I think we definitely should. And you know, this you know, only came out, you know, a couple of weeks ago, you know, early February 2022. It sort of really took everyone by surprise, but this was a verdict that was handed down. So in Norway, in the Oslo District Court, and basically what we've seen is that they've put an overarching ban on the breeding of the bulldog and the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel in the whole of Norway.
So for those listening, it's basically, it was a Norwegian court had made this ruling that effectively bans the reproduction of two common breeds. So you can't breed a Cavalier to a Cavalier and an English bulldog to an English bulldog, which goes against all traditional, you know, pedigree breeding. Interesting. So,
and it effectively means, yeah, you're right. You know, that they can still breed them, you know, with other breeds, but the breeding of those two breeds as a purebred dog has effectively been banned. They said it violates their Animal Welfare Act. And yeah, Imogen, I don't know if you've looked into it a little bit more, but was there anything else that you found interesting about what had happened in Norway?
Well, and I certainly wouldn't call myself an absolute expert in this area, but it has been, it definitely veterinary circles have been talking about it quite a lot this week. And yes, it's interesting because absolutely they've effectively made it illegal to breed those two purebred dogs, and saying that it's contravening their Animal Welfare Act. But interestingly, the background in Norway is really that they have a bit of a history of having very, very stringent animal welfare laws. So their Animal Welfare Act is actually one of the strictest in the world. So there is a little bit of precedent for them bringing in laws like this, compared to other countries.
Yeah, well, the Scandinavians, they're always ahead of the curve on a lot of things, you know, not just animal welfare, but I mean, they're always very, very progressive.
Absolutely. And I was looking at their Animal Welfare Act yesterday, and it's interesting. They have a couple of things in there that other countries definitely wouldn't go quite as far with. So for example, they have, it's literally in their law that if you find an animal that's been injured, you have a legal obligation to do something about that animal. If you find wildlife that's been injured, you have to do something. You're obliged to contact owners of strays. They can't be put down. There's all sorts of different bits of legislation that are quite strict. The most interesting one, which a colleague of mine pointed out, and I didn't believe him when he said this, and we actually had to Google it to look it up because I said, no, surely not. I hadn't heard of it before. Is it is effectively illegal to de-sex your dog in Norway, which is incredible.
George's face has just dropped.
Look, I'm going to start with my Dion question. Where is Norway and what is Norway? So I've done my own research because, to be honest, I hadn't heard much. You know, really, Norway, where is, it's a Scandinavian country. But interestingly, it sits sort of, its neighbours are Sweden and Denmark. But I found out that Norway is the sixth richest country in the world.
Really? In per capita?
Per capita. And guess where they make all their money from? Whaling. No, not whaling. Sorry. It's from black gold oil. So, you know, there we go. A little bit of history about this Norway, and they can play a bit of, you know, football / soccer, which they're good at. And, yeah, they do set some really tough things. Not being able, not de-sexing you. What is the, tell me the health and welfare management there. So you're banning a particular breed, fine, but not de-sexing?
Yes, so that comes from, basically, they have a very strict point in their Welfare Act that states that you should not be doing any surgical intervention on an animal unless it is for a specific health reason. So, obviously, that a lot of countries have done things like banning tail docking or ear docking and things like that that used to be very popular. Lots of countries around the world have banned those things because they're more aesthetic. You know, they're not important for the welfare of the animal, exactly. But Norway actually goes so far as to include things like elective de-sexing as part of that surgery that's not important for the welfare of the dog. So actually what I would be fascinated to know, because I've never worked in Norway, if any of our listeners are from Norway or have lived there or have friends who live there, please tell us whether people actually effectively get around this ban by arguing that it is better for the health of the dog to de-sex them, or whether actually everybody has an intact dog. I'd be fascinated to know.
Yeah, I mean, maybe there's just lots of, you know, yeah, unneutered dogs that are just wandering around the streets and...
Well, not wandering around the streets, but on leads being owned by people.
And I mean, it's crazy to think because of, you know, you can, you know, ban breeds on one hand, but at the same time, then you're allowing the breeding of really anything because, you know, so-and-so can jump the fence and something can happen. And it really creates the risk of a lot of unwanted litters potentially if you're not de-sexing.
Potentially, but they definitely still in. So the reason that this particular act has just been part of this particular bill has just really been passed is because they are strict on breeding standards. Basically, they are definitely the argument for the banning of the they call the English bulldog, but we would probably call the British bulldog over here, and the cavy is because they have a line in their legislation that says that you cannot breed an unhealthy dog. Basically, you shouldn't be breeding a dog that has is carrying a genetic disease, or that cannot be effectively healthy, or cannot produce effectively healthy puppies. So they have defined the common health problems that affect these two breeds as being essentially being so prevalent that it is effectively impossible to breed a healthy bulldog or a healthy cavalier. So that's their argument.
And I suppose just I want to get this out and make it clear from the start. So for all our pedigree dog listeners, the Norwegian Kennel Club has opposed this lawsuit. So yeah, just so people understand, the Kennel Club is opposed to it. This is a law set by them. And I know the ANKC came out with a statement about, you know, ensuring healthy dogs and breeding healthy dogs. And in no way does what's happened in Norway reflect what is happening here. But my question, Imogen, why those two breeds? You know, you've got other squash fate. Why the English Bulldog? And, you know, I'm going to say it, I've heard it referred to as the pinup breed, the Cavalier. Why those two?
I actually don't have a good answer for this. I'm interested to know if Nathan, if you found anything on this either. But I actually, my understanding was that I definitely heard something about those two breeds being the two breeds that they really could produce the legal backing for. So they had enough statistical evidence of the particular diseases in those breeds to be able to pass this legislation. I think they would love to bring it in for a wider variety of breeds, but these were the two that they managed to pass in law. But does anyone else? I looked for a little bit more info on it and couldn't find it this morning.
I think that
I've done a bit of research, Imogen, and let's have a look here. Let's have a look at their numbers. So I researched the Norwegian Kennel Club, and last year they registered 37,000 new dogs, of which, let me just check my data, 83 were only English Bulldogs and 416 were Cavaliers. So
it's not big numbers.
Not big numbers. So, you know, the 20-odd breeders of English Bulldogs and 30 maybe of Cavaliers, it's going to impact. Maybe they've approached that. My question is too then, if these are the numbers, you know, what is the most popular? I did some research. The most popular breed registered in the Norwegian Kennel Club was Border Collies, 1,679, followed by the English Setter, which is 1,300, and then the Staffordshire Bull Terrier, 1,200. So not huge numbers. Small according to a scale what we have here, but interesting, there's not that large number. You know, I would have thought if you're going to maybe look at reason for banning them, look at maybe other things rather than just squash face. But I've got a question, and my sort of son asked me this. What does, I see four letters always come up when anyone mentions it, BOAS. Can you please explain what BOAS is?
Absolutely. So that stands for brachycephalic obstructive airway syndrome, or BOAS is what, however one refers to it, basically. And so BOAS is a particular syndrome. It's not really a specific disease. It's kind of it's a combination of different factors that can lead to a dog suffering from breathing problems is the main problem. Overheating problems would be the other thing that they commonly get with BOAS. And it is typically very short-nosed breeds or brachycephalic breeds that suffer from it, and they can definitely suffer from it from two different extents. Different breeds have different predispositions to it, and then individual dogs can be more prone to BOAS. So not, for example, not every British Bulldog will get BOAS or will suffer from BOAS and have a BOAS episode, but they are much more likely to get BOAS than longer-nosed breeds. They're one of the most highly represented ones.
So as a vet, you know, and general, is it sort of breeds like, you know, pugs you're seeing, French Bulldogs, which are popular here? Is that where you see this?
Okay. Absolutely. So the top three would be the three most, they call them the most extremely brachycephalic dogs because they are much more brachycephalic than the others. And that would be the British Bulldog, the French Bulldog and the Pug. So those are the three that are more highly represented than the others. Yeah,
and it's a good point, George. It goes back to your original question, which was, you know, why did they single out these two breeds? And I think, you know, the British Bulldog, perhaps you can wrap your head around because of, as you said, the brachycephalic issues, and brachy breeds do have a objectively shorter lifespan than other breeds of dog because of those issues. But I do find the Cavalier King Charles Spaniel an interesting addition to that because, I mean, you could argue that they suffer from a low level of brachycephaly, but ultimately I think what's come out separately is that they, you know, there are heart conditions and heart issues that are in the cavi, which, I mean, again, it's certainly not as extreme as brachycephaly. You can address them. You can try and breed those things out within lines. And I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit more, but it was an interesting combination. I think I've heard in the responses that a lot of people felt that it was a bit unfair for the sort of the Cavalier to be lumped in with this sort of ban as well.
Definitely left field, the Cavalier. And I think from what I'm reading, and you're right, Nathan, I think they've chosen the Cavalier not because of its brachycephalic, but because of other conditions, especially mitral valve which they see a lot in and causes is a health issue in that, but you can't test for those. How do you do, you know, there's no real way of screening. So I think that's one of the main reasons they chose that as a breed. But interesting, it's sort of the question, why that one breed? I still don't know. And thank God, you mentioned the top three. I have two brachycephalic breeds myself, the Boston and the Griffin, and they haven't made your top three, Imogen Lucky. Whew. Because I was looking at poor Mary there and I thought, oh, no. But look, they do struggle in the heat, yes, and they do struggle to breathe. And, you know, most dogs struggle in heat, full stop. And, you know, this, unfortunately, we can blame the development of the breed and how we sort of looked at developing a breed to look more human-like. And this is one of the challenges. But I think what this is addressing is that we probably have seen more pronounced breeding towards that squash face, which sort of came out of some studies out of the UK. And really it's up to breeders to start to sort of focus away from that. And maybe that's something that happens in the show ring and judges ring. Judges awarding more accentuated sort of features like that. Maybe we need to move away from that. But if you talk to most breeders, they don't select for that phenotype. They select for temperament and health, which is more important than what. So maybe all this is going to sort of help people sort of ask that question and start to challenge them, sort of breed towards something. You know, if this is happening now in Norway, it will slowly maybe, you know, evolve to other breeds and maybe move to other countries. I'm not sure, you know, who knows? This could be a snowball effect.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. And for those of our listeners that may not be as familiar with the way the purebred world is made up as well. I mean, the purebred dogs are bred to a standard, and you know that standard obviously outlines how the breed should look and, you know, distinctive features that come with that. And you know, yeah, there is certainly an argument that in order to breed to the standard, they are breeding for perhaps potentially dangerous or you know, traits that encourage you know, undesirable features in the dogs, and from a health perspective. And I think that, you know, that definitely comes into the show ring as well. You know, it depends on the way that they get rewarded. But at the same time as well, there are a lot of other breeders that maybe aren't associated with, you know, the firm breed standard that are trying to breed away from some of those tropes and trying to create a bit more of a wider, you know, I guess, view of what that breed could look like. You know, a bulldog with maybe a longer snout, or, you know, something which is a bit different. So I think it goes back to that question that Imogen mentioned, or I guess the line in that Animal Welfare Act, which was, you know, it's illegal to breed from an unhealthy dog. And maybe a question I'll put to you, Imogen, as well, is can you breed a healthy British Bulldog? Can you breed a healthy Cavalier? Is it possible? I think that's what really it comes down to. That's probably what they're arguing.
And that is the most controversial point, and the point that people disagree on and different countries disagree on, and the definition of what is a healthy dog. And certainly with the bulldog, or the English bulldog, as they're calling it in Norway, I think some of the arguments were obviously to do with brachycephaly, also to do with other diseases that those dogs get. So they are predisposed to some skin diseases and eye diseases and things like that, just from, you know, their wrinkles and other just genetic tropes. But the other thing is, I believe there was some discussion about the inbreeding coefficient of the bulldog population in Norway. And I think that's interesting because it's very interesting that George looked up how many there actually are, because obviously with purebred dogs, the other thing about breeding to a standard is you're obviously only allowed to breed pedigree dogs to another pedigree bulldog. So you have to be breeding within that breed. So you're not allowed to outcross if you're breeding a pedigree dog. So potentially, if they're not getting a lot of international bloodlines coming through in Norway, they might be breeding slightly more inbred dogs, which means maybe they're getting even more extreme health problems potentially. And that might be another reason.
Well, I mean, there's only 80 odd British bulldogs being born in a calendar year in Norway. Like, that's really not a huge breeding pool.
Or being registered, at least on the, yeah, so of probably older age. Yeah.
It's a real boutique breed. obviously, just by the numbers. But, you know, for those listening to, the ANKC does have a rule that you are not allowed to breed with anything in your pedigree, brother or sister. It's not allowed. So all that came out of this whole inquiry that was out of the UK, looking at inbreeding coefficients. It is a challenge when you have a breed where numbers are small anyway. But today, technology like importing semen from overseas allows you to add to your to your line. And, you know, you also have got the whole challenge of breeding towards a temperament. What I thought I would do is I'm going to read exactly, because I'm still a bit, for those that are a bit confused, I am still, what sort of brought this about. So I'm just reading straight off a website here. The lawsuit in Norway was based on Section 25 of the Norwegian Animal Welfare Act 2009, which states that breeding must produce, and I quote, this is quoted, robust animals which function well and have good health. The law also states that breeding shouldn't be carried out in a way that it passes on genes that negatively influence animals' physical or mental function. This bit's interesting. The NSPA sued three kennel clubs and six individual breeders, including the Norwegian Kennel Club and the respective kennel clubs, for English Bulldogs and Cavaliers. The latter breed is also susceptible to heart disease and sirigomelia, a progressive. I like this bit, Imogen. This is for us to hear. The NSPCA noted the case heard in the Oslo court in November involved scrutiny by two co-judges, one a veterinarian and the other a geneticist. So it shows you it's been done based on people taking action, who obviously purchased some of these dogs, sued, and then the Animal Welfare Act, as you stated initially, Imogen, is quite powerful and came about with wanting these laws changed, sued three kennel clubs, which is interesting.
That must be what I had heard, George, earlier about there was a particular legal reason why these two breeds were the ones that could be acted against. That will be why, because that's where those lawsuits came from. Yeah,
it wasn't anything random. It was someone who had taken a few breeders to court over the health of their breed. And these were the two dogs that were, because there's another study, 213 dogs of classic brachycephalic breed were taken, and breeds include English Bulldogs, Boston Terriers, Cavaliers, Shih Tzus and Boxers that had fallen into the hands of irresponsible selective breeding. Of the total, 40 were French Bulldogs and 47 were Pugs. So interesting. So they looked at a few others. There's a bit of a study, but let's not get it. Let's, again, the FCI and the ANKC and the Norwegian Kennel Club do not support this legislation.
I think it's really good that we're getting into the nuances of, you know, why this happened and the context behind it in Norway as well, because, you know, you see those headlines and, you know, the media will run with it and say, you know, these breeds are banned, and, you know, you if you don't unpick why, or, you know, the context, you don't really understand it. And I think it's great that we've had some breeding bodies within the country, like within our country in Australia and around the world, that have come out and said, well, you know, maybe this is a bit extreme, and there are other ways to produce healthy dogs that, you know, don't go to just the absolute extreme of banning them outright.
Well, there's a fascinating international context behind this whole movement, I think, because the Cavalier is a very curveball choice, and I think obviously that's because of these particular legal precedents in Norway, and they are mainly banning them in relation to the prevalence of mitral valve disease in the Cavalier, which, very interestingly, just from anecdotal comparison, in Australia, we have breeders on Right Paw who breed Cavaliers who honestly don't get mitral valve disease in their lines. They really don't. And their dogs live to be 13 or 14 and they never get heart disease. So it's fascinating. It definitely is possible to develop lines that have less of this disease in them. You know, one breeder I've spoken to says she knows, within Australia, she knows which stud dogs carry the predisposition and which ones don't. And so therefore she just really doesn't see it in her puppies very much at all. So it definitely is possible. So that's why it's a very interesting choice. But breed-specific legislation in general is something that has been brought into law all over the world over the last, many years, at least 10 years, there's been breed-specific legislation coming out everywhere. The first kind of breed-specific legislation would be dogs that are banned in certain countries. So dogs that you can't import in certain countries, or the first dogs that you can't breed in other countries were, you know, dogs like the pit bull, for example. You can't import pit bulls into Australia. You can't breed pit bulls in Australia. So there are lots of those kind of big, scary bully breeds that have been banned in various countries, and that's got a long history.
Yeah, and interestingly, those bans, I mean, I imagine were more to do with temperament than with health. Is that right?
Yes, those ones, absolutely. And then the other big movement internationally has been the brachycephalic movement. So that's why the bulldog ban is much less of a surprise, I would say. The classic example is the Netherlands. So the Netherlands brought in a ban in actually 2014, and that effectively banned the breeding of 20 different brachycephalic breeds, so short-nosed breeds. But it's interesting, they never really managed to enforce it until 2019, when there was a specific crackdown. And then they really kind of made it, actually brought it into effect, essentially. And that was very controversial in 2019. And I remember I was working in the UK at that point as a vet. And so there was lots of discussion about, you know, Dutch dogs, and Dutch dogs were being imported, and it was a huge thing in the UK. And even, you know, organisations like the British Veterinary Association were quite supportive of the legislation coming out in the Netherlands. And they really were starting, you know, they're quite strong on their brachycephalic policy, and they, you know, they do say that you, I think they may even have eased some of their language in their policies now, but they definitely were supporting vet clinics. There was a movement in the UK where vet clinics were starting to refuse elective cesarean sections in breeds like the British Bulldog and the French Bulldog, because they didn't want to support the breeding of these breeds, because they didn't believe that they were could be healthy. Basically, it was very interesting, and that was actually being semi-endorsed by the British Veterinary Association. So there's been a huge international background in this kind of thing over the last few years. So the bulldog definitely.
This is just the latest chapter in a very long saga and tale.
Mm. Yeah, look, I'm going to say it again, but they are cute. No matter what you think, no one ever sees you in a park and sees the Labrador and goes, oh, gee, that looks cute. Or, you know, a German Shepherd, oh, that looks cute. But you've got a Pug, or you've got a Frenchie, or you've got a Boston, they always go, oh, it looks cute. There's something about that face that, and maybe we're the problem too here. We're the ones that have wanted something more cute. And, you know, the breeder has delivered. As long as, you know, they've gone from having, you know, a nose to now not even seeing the nose. So I think that's where we need to be a bit more sensible about it. So breeders need to sort of say, you know, enough of, you know, these exaggerated features. Maybe we just stick to a standard. And if it means that you have to implement and use a dog that has less of a, breeders can work around it. You know, maybe it's the backyard non-registered breeders that are driving more of this, you know, health issues in them. I'm just putting it out there. I know that when you talk to most of the, you know, dedicated breeders, they all try and address any issues when it comes to health, and that includes breathing issues.
Absolutely, I think health has to be the answer, really. And that ties back to the responses from people like the ANKC, Dogs Australia, the FCI. They're all saying, you know, it has to come back to health and the health testing that you can do. And for all of our listeners, we did a fantastic podcast earlier in 2021 about brachycephalic health with one of the breeders on Rightpaw, Our World of Bulldogs, CJ, where we talked about, you know, how you can try and push the development of the breed forward from a health perspective by breeding for certain traits and health testing. So there is definitely an answer in health. There has to be.
And we do know a number of breeders who, exactly as George just said, have actually even taken themselves away from Dogs Australia and are no longer members of Dogs Australia because they've joined organisations like the MDBA and other organisations because they want to do outcrossing. And they have decided that that's what they want to do to improve their line. They want to cross with other breeds in there somewhere in order to get longer noses. So that is definitely a trend for sure.
Imogen, what I'd like to know is I'm a data person. Data does not lie. Is there data that the vet association keeps on just health issues associated with this breed. You know, do we see a higher number? Do we see an average lifespan for these breeds which is less than other breeds? Is that something that we can access, or the vets can access?
Yes, definitely. For stats like the lifespan stat, that definitely is a real stat, and we do actually. So Rightpaw sends to any brachycephalic breeder who wants to join Rightpaw, we send them a big booklet of information that includes links to some of those papers that have got some of those stats in them, just so that they, if they're trying to upskill, that they're aware of them. And I don't have the details of that paper in front of me, but I believe it is something like in the three most extreme brachies, so that's the British Bulldog, the French Bulldog, and the Pug, there is definitely a shorter lifespan that has been demonstrated. But pretty sure it's something like they're about 3 years shorter on average than other breeds of a similar size. Quite significant. But the other stat that I don't have in front of me, but that would, I imagine, would differ very strongly between Norway and Australia, would be the mitral valve disease rate in Cavaliers, because I've definitely seen journalists writing articles about this Norway ban, where they have been sweeping statements like, all Cavaliers have heart disease by the age of 10, which is absolutely not true in Australia. I don't know whether that's true in Norway, but that is not true in Australia. It's a high percentage, but it's not all of them by any means. BOAS is a very difficult disease to get proper stats on, because it is a syndrome, and you can have mild BOAS, severe BOAS. It's not something that necessarily gets reported on any kind of centralized database, so that is quite difficult to get real stats on. So there are vets out there who are trying to do more studies, and more data would be very useful in all of these situations.
So I suppose, Imogen, the question a lot of listeners are going to have, and even myself, is where do you think the AVA sits on all this? We're obviously not going to go the extreme of Norway, but this is obviously raised discussion internally within the AVA and its senior people. I'm sure they've all been reached out to. Where do you think that the industry sits with this legislation, and what it might mean and impact here for Australian breeders?
I think my understanding of the AVA's policies are that they don't endorse the extreme bans. They've never outright endorsed them. I do think, so their current brachycephalic policy, and you can look it up on their website, is that they basically ask breeders to be very prudent about health. And they do say, look, we acknowledge there is a huge health and welfare problem with some of these breeds, with the brachycephalic breeds, and breeders need to be cautious about breeding from dogs that are unhealthy. So they use the same umbrella terms, basically saying is there or is there not such a thing as a healthy, extremely brachycephalic dog? But they don't outright answer that question. They just pose the question and say that they definitely support more airway testing, so more BOAS airway testing before breeding, and they definitely they endorse lots and lots of health testing, spinal x-rays for spinal problems, trachea diameter testing, all sorts of things like that. They're very, very strong on suggesting that to breeders, but they haven't outright banned anything in Australia, and I don't think they will. I think it's unlikely we would ever go down that road.
They seem quite objective and moderate about it. I think
they try to be moderate, definitely.
And that's the thing. You don't want it to feel like a breeders versus vets, dichotomy.
Generation of vets, Nathan, that are coming along, open-minded, able to listen. And let's understand. There are thousands and thousands of these dogs that are pets to someone. So you simply just, they're there. You just can't simply ban them. And you're right, Imogen. The AVA has always taken a fairly sensible approach. Even when it came to the banning of the pit bull, they had a sensible approach. They never sit there and go, full stop, this is not happening as of today. I honestly think that where I sit, I would like to see, and I mentioned it again, some data, what we've got. What are the health issues? I know you gave me something based on age, but, you know, how many ovens, what litter sizes we're having, all this sort of stuff. And unfortunately, data across diseases, it lacks worldwide, because unfortunately you just never get information back. You know, someone breeds a set of animals, off they go, they go off as a pet. No one, the breeder never communicates with that pet owner on any health issues. You never get any data back on anything that might test positive on a, in a genetic way as well. So good. I'm glad they've taken that sensible approach. I'm pretty sure they will come out with a statement, or they probably have, sort of stating where they sit from. And I don't think they will simply ban. There's just too many of these dogs out there. They're lovely, cute pets for too many pet owners to simply say these dogs are going. Well, the issue of interbreeding is, again, another controversial topic. We've got oodles. The last thing we want is oo dogs or... What would you cross a bulldog with? I'm trying to think of a name.
Bulldoodle. Oh gosh. But I think it's a really good point, and something that I think we wanted to talk about, which was, you know, Right Paw stands as well on banning breeds, because when we were setting up the Right Paw website for the first time and looking at all of the breeds that obviously we could have on the website, health is a big priority for us, and you know there was that question, you know, do you list brachycephalic breeds? Do you allow those breeders to put up a profile, and you know, can you breed a healthy dog? And you know, we did have we had to sit down and think about it. And I think where we still sit and where we really firmly believe is that banning breeds isn't necessarily the answer, because all you're doing is creating a black market effectively of breeds that will go about continually unregulated, and you're just pushing them underground. And I think that ultimately that is something which I do worry about in Norway, because interestingly, and this is, I think, really important, in Norway, they've banned the breeding of the bulldog and the cavy, but they haven't banned the ownership of them. You can still own one. And especially if we're going back to that point around you don't have to de-sex your dog, how are they going to police the breeding of these dogs? You know, ultimately, you're removing traceability if you push them underground. So from our perspective as Right Paw, we've always said you have to... you're better off trying to regulate the you know, sale and push for higher standards. And that's why all, you know, extremely bracky breeders on Right Paw have to do a certain minimum number of health tests. But banning breeds, like, it's a slippery slope.
Absolutely. And that's where, the major sort of statement that persuaded us at Right Paw to probably be a bit more lenient but be strict with health testing about, you know, which breeds we featured and allowed on the site and all that kind of thing, was actually a statement from the FCI, so that's the Fédération Cynologique Internationale, who are, for people who don't know, is essentially like a European body that kind of oversees the purebred kind of dog world.
You did a good job trying to pronounce that, because I
was going to do
it
in a French accent, and I completely panicked and didn't do it.
For those people that are listening, Imogen and Nathan, that might think this is a fantastic idea, just so you know, I looked this up again, and this is interesting. There is a Vets Against Brachycephalism organization, 1,500 members, of which, Imogen, you're not a member. I checked up. You're not one of them.
no, I'm not.
Interesting. 1,500, and they're completely, and they think this is the best thing that's happened. It should be happening worldwide. So I'm just putting it out there. And to quote one of their vets, Dr. Emma Goodman-Milne, she quotes, "The UK Kennel Club should be deeply ashamed of their inaction. We need to follow suit." So, you know, but as you say, we bring this up because if you look at even the ban of the pit bull, what did it do? It drove the breed underground. It created this backyard culture of breeding. You just simply can't ban it. It doesn't work. It's shown it doesn't work. Banning a breed does not improve or address the health issues. Simple as that.
Absolutely. This FCI statement that they put out was in conjunction with the BOAS research group from Cambridge University in the UK. And George, that's where all of your much wanted data will be coming from. They at the Cambridge Uni are really trying to lead the way in producing papers and coming up with real data on BOAS. They're amazing. And they put out a statement with the FCI where they essentially said, banning these breeds for the sake of their health is not realistic, and it may make the situation worse for exactly what we've just been talking about. There's a danger that breeding these dogs will just move into the shadows. So it won't stop. It will just mean that fewer of those dogs will be produced in the FCI system. They'll all be outside of the system. So it's uncontrolled, they're not registered, and they're not enrolled in any health schemes. So that's the thing, even though, yes, there is the argument that purebred dogs being bred to a standard, yes, the, you know, judges may be rewarding extreme traits, and maybe there is, you know, the kennel clubs do have to really address that problem with their standards. They really do. But the other thing is that there's another group of purebred pedigree breeders who are really trying to have some regulation of health testing. You know, they really want to say you can only be a member of the French Bulldog Club of New South Wales, for example, if you are doing the following tests. And they're trying to make that a unifying approach, which will gradually improve their breed. Whereas, you know, it's, if you just ban them outright, and then it's just backyard breeders who are going to be breeding these dogs, they may not necessarily have the same ethics around it. So I think the exception to that is the breeders who are outside of the pedigree system, but are very, very passionate about changing the standard. And then they are the people who are really leading the way. They are the happy medium, basically. So hopefully the breed clubs will really reflect on some of these controversies and work with that group of breeders to really maybe try and make their official policies a bit more allowable, basically a bit more flexible.
So, and people need to understand that it's probably a better approach if you do it so it's something that goes over time, to try and look at changes, because I get this a lot, where sometimes, you know, a breeder will ring me and try and suggest breeding this and making changes, and I'm trying to tell them that it doesn't happen in one generation. If you look at pedigree dog breeders, bringing along a change and bringing a change in the phenotype and just the what it looks like is, you know, 3, 4, and sometimes even 5 generations. So we're talking 5 years. So maybe a better approach would have been, let's try and see change and look at it on an annual basis and see that there's been improvements happening.
Oh, I think you're 100% spot on. I think it's a lifetime pursuit. And if you shut it down, then how are you going to improve it? So
interestingly, that was the main argument in the Netherlands for their legislation when they banned the Brachy breeds. They introduced a traffic light system. So they introduced, so the red categorized dogs were dogs that, so that they were all basing this on the length of their nose, basically the length of their snout. So the technical term for that is the craniofacial ratio. And your craniofacial ratio has to be over a certain size in order to breed in the Netherlands. And the red ones are the ones where their snout was essentially shorter than 1/3 of their skull length. So really tiny. Like when you look at that, that is the flattest face you can possibly have. And those breeds were banned outright. And I believe that the cutoff that they introduced meant that pretty much those three extreme Brachy dogs were pretty much all banned immediately because of they had quite a strict cutoff. But then they also had an orange level and a green level. And the orange level were the dogs that had a nose between 1/3 and 1/2 the length of the skull. And then the green ones were greater, you know, the length was greater than half of the length of the skull. So the orange ones were allowed to be bred, but only if they followed other strict criteria as well, but because they deemed those healthy. And then the green ones were deemed absolutely healthy and they were allowed to be bred, you know, in any situation. So their plan has been to gradually drag all of those red dogs up to an orange level by only allowing outcrossing of those dogs, gradually improve the length of the nose. And then the argument was that within 10 years, they won't have any extreme brachycephalic dogs, and they could, you know, all of those breeds would then be allowed to be bred. So it was a long-term plan, exactly like you just said.
Imogen, you know, every time I approach traffic lights now, you've got me thinking breeds, what Brachy felt, you've changed my whole view. I'm never going to run a yellow light again. I'm going to...
Whenever you're stopped at a red light, you'll be thinking about bulldogs.
Interesting.
I've done a public service for the people of Melbourne.
instead of a red light camera, have a brachycephalic camera, you know. Interesting. Wow, very nice. Imogen, I'm always impressed with your knowledge. You know, you young veterinarians, I don't know how you absorb it all in like sponges and are able to keep up to date. I you know, whoever, who wants to, you need to get on these committees. But anyway, more importantly, competition time. Doctor, give me the
news, I gotta... We've left it till the very end.
Yeah, so we sort of kept it to it. So let's have a think about, you know, what we want listeners to email, email George at orivet.com on the 10th of March between 3:20 and 3:25 p.m. with the answer to this question. What does BOAS, what is that short for? Email me the answer to that for a DNA voucher, or sorry, loyalty points to the value of $195, full breed profile. And a shout out to all the Right Paw members that have been joining up as part of the Right Paw discount program, Nathan. I haven't clicked so many approvals in the last 2 weeks. They're all, we know what we're like. Breeders love a discount. And if you can get anything from $10 to $20 to $5 off, they'll jump on it. So, of course, we provide discounts for a number of organisations, including Right Paw members. And you can actually be a member of an association and be an associate member of Right Paw and get a further discount. I don't know how I make any money in this job.
Well, I'm sure you're sitting there thinking, God, I wish that I'm longing for the day when you can do a genetic test for BOAS.
I'd retire. Look, if no, ahead of BOAS is hip dysplasia. The amount of times I get, can you do it? If I could have a genetic test for hip dysplasia, I'd be retired, Nathan. I'd be able to sit back and just, you know.
I think it would be the best thing for the breeding world.
You'd be knighted, George, if you could do that.
I said, that's right. I wouldn't be grumpy, George, sort of waiting for this. I'd be so nice and relaxed.
Well, speaking of genetic tests, I think, you know, we've got Imogen back and we'll have to get her to choose another number from George's genetic playbook.
Yes, we're going to go through the book again and finish off with some more. Yeah, you thought you heard enough about diseases. I think what we can start too, once we've finished our book, Nathan, I've been thinking about what could be next. And I think what we do for our next one is we go to... the Australian Dog Judge's Guide, and we can choose a page out of that.
That's true. I do love that too.
Yeah, it's a shout out to Johnny Bryson, who sent me over his autographed copy of, as he promised me, an autographed copy of his book. And for those listening, George, your genetic research has helped save some of the endangered breeds within this book. See, from eventual extinction. Johnny, thank you very much.
Where's the knighthood?
Yeah, so we'll start on that when we finish, because I thought, what's going to, and look at this. Has he got his, let's see if he's got his pages numbered. To his credit, he does. And for those that haven't got this book, I know you've got a fantastic, very simple to read.
Well, why don't we do that? Why don't we do it as a start? Let's go for it.
John, what I'll do, do you have a copy of this book, Nathan?
We do. We have a different edition, but it's sitting on
our
table. There
is a Right Paw copy of that book.
Well, then what we're going to do is I will shout out the number and you can read, and I'll do the disease. So that way people are, and you can, because I think the way you describe a breed, Nathan, will be so eloquent. It'll be beautiful, but just the way I'll just skim through it and go, oh, yes, guy. So we'll do that. Why don't we do that for the next show? We're going to read out a number from John's book. But today we'll stick with the disease.
All right, we'll stick to health. This was the subject of the episode. So
for those that want to purchase the book, edition 3 is $39 AUD. Perfect, fits in the glove box of your car, into your bag. You can take it out with you in your little, man or woman bag when you're out there. I know it's a lovely booklet, really well set out. Not in alphabetical order for those that want to know, but based on group order, which makes it challenging.
Toy dogs and utility, but Imogen, why don't you, while George is collecting his Bible, a number between 1 and what are we now, 170 odd? Okay, you've got a lot of options to choose from.
Okay, can I please pick number 8, an early one?
Ooh, okay. I think we've had, we've had lucky
Ooh,
7.
Close.
I think we've done, have we done a 7 and an 8? Because look what you've picked, and I am not making this up. So page 8 is part of page 7. And you're not going to guess. Can you read out what that is?
No way. That says brachycephalic syndrome.
It's so big it goes over 2 pages.
We chosen brachycephalic syndrome.
Was that fate or was I cheating?
This is like, it's scary because we've just done a whole episode on it. And you want me to read about it as well? I can't read about this. We're going to read it out, but literally we all know about it. But let's quickly read some brief little, it's called the short, broad head. It's also known, it's seen within breeds. It's called short, broad head, referring to the conformation of having a skull that is almost as wide as it is long. Examples include, we've been through them all, and a collection of anatomical abnormalities can be found in these brachycephalic breeds of varying degrees. These include quarterly displaced maxillae, which is the upper jaws further back than down the shorter ones, short muzzle, elongated soft palate, which I sometimes see with Mary and Charlie, you know, when there's some, they have that sort of, when they get excited, there's a, this sort of.
It almost looks like an asthma attack sometimes to some people, yeah.
And people are going to say, dog, we're on, go, leave her, she's fine, she's excited. This is what happens when you've got one of these dogs. A stenotic nares, or very narrow nostrils. Tortuous turbinates. Wow, look at this word in here, tortuous turbinates, which is less room for the airflow within the nasal cavity.
Yeah, the nostrils, yeah.
Everted laryngeal saccules, soft tissues protruding into the middle of the larynx, and hyperplastic trachea, smaller than normal tracheal width, most commonly seen in the bulldog. Wow, these, when you read these out, they are quite scary. Maybe we should give these to the judges when they're in the ring and they can read and go, does this dog have a large caudal displaced maxillae? Does this dog have an everted laryngeal? Anyway, a dog with brachial syndrome may have one or more of the above abnormalities. Some of these abnormalities can be corrected surgically, is what it says. For example, elongated soft palate, one of the most common abnormalities that causes clinical problems, can be trimmed to the correct length relatively easily and probably cost you an arm and a leg, Imogen, am I right?
Absolutely. It's definitely not cheap. My hot tip to anyone who has got a brachycephalic puppy is please get pet insurance immediately.
Okay. Good advice. Pet insurance. Good advice. And really, you can even surgically work on the stenotic nares, it's saying here, where they can widen them a bit for you. It is important to perform any corrective surgery before the damage to the larynx or trachea occurs. Other management practices are to avoid exercising in hot conditions, very sensible approach, and avoid obesity, as this puts even more stress on the upper airways, which is one of my challenges with Mary. I can't get her to lose weight. And the problem is exercise. She's not at a high level of exercise. She'll sit and stop in the middle of walking her and just do a complete mannequin on me. I have to pull her away. So all these are important. And, you know, we can maybe even spend a whole podcast on obesity, because I'm seeing more and more dogs where weight is an issue. Using a harness instead of a collar. Yes, I do that with Mary. I've moved it to a harness. It helps with hyperplastic tracheas. And it is important that any normal abnormal respiratory noise or pattern is fully investigated by your vet as soon as possible.
There you go. You couldn't have picked a better option. There we go. It's fate.
And it lists here the breeds as the Boston, the Boxer, the British French Bulldog, the Lasso Apso is one, the Pekingese, which we all forgot about, which is the ancient, the Pug, the Shar Pei as well, the Shih Tzu, the Cavalier King Charles is listed here, and even the Staffordshire Bull Terrier is one of the breeds listed in this booklet. Thanks to Dr. Nettie Maddy, who's put all this together. Fabulous information, well written out. Great choice, Imogen. Wow, this was meant to be. That is scary. And you don't have a copy of that. Well, but you didn't even look at that. You just thought, well, I'll go.
I can vouch for the fact that she just picked that out of the air.
Yeah, just maybe subconsciously I knew what page it was. I don't know.
But look, Imogen, thank you so much for joining us. It was I'm sure this will be, you know, just the start of a very long conversation about this topic, but it'll be interesting to see where it ends up. And I think, you know, it was great to have your expertise on the podcast. So thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for having me, guys. Really enjoyed it.
Always great to have Imogen on. I've learned a lot again. Like all one of these podcasts, everything sounds, I'm going to do a bit more reading. Hopefully we've helped some of those breeders and pet owners who were confused by what this all meant. And just to clarify, we support what every association has mentioned, is we don't support banning. We support the management and breeding towards health and ensuring that you follow your code of ethics.
Absolutely. Yeah, we try not to be too partisan on these podcasts, but I think this is something we can all agree on, and that's, you know, putting health first, and that's the best thing we can do for dogs.
Definitely. Animal welfare comes first.
Fantastic. All right, brilliant. Thanks, George. Thanks, Imogen. And to all of our listeners, we'll see you very soon.